Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Drop the puck. Bruins win the faceoff, and the series between the Bruins and the Jackets is underway. Texier out at center ice. Achari brings it over the line into the right circle. Shoots. He scores! Settles the puck. Ducks the head, fires it on right wing Johansson to the right circle. Johansson, backhand toward the slot, off the post! They score! That was a rocket in and out of a net so fast! Charlie Powell released it, and we're tied at two! Near circle, Johansson fires the puck, and they score!
It was a hard-fought one. It was, you know, overtime. I think that's how it's going to be, you know, against this team. They're a great team. So they did on the first round. But it, no matter what, you know, we win, we lose. We're coming back that next game, and we got to bring it. You know, you can't just think it's going to happen on its own. You got to come back that next one. You know, they're going to be coming to play better. So it's up to us to do that same.
Welcome into another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning. Back for round two. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. Thanks to our producer, Kristen Sermon, for putting that intro together as the Bruins, with a 1-0 lead over the Columbus Blue Jackets, headed into tonight's game two. And be perfectly honest with you guys, we were here last Saturday morning. I wasn't feeling that great about the odds of being back here to talk about round two of the playoffs.
A lot of people had that feeling, didn't they?
Coming out of that game Friday night, the loss at home in game five, this didn't feel like a team that was ready to roll off back-to-back wins and win that series the way they did.
Yeah, the non-goalie interference call seems like a long time ago.
It certainly does. But here we are for round two of the postseason, and the Blue Jackets are the opponent, and we got an exciting one out of game one, and it feels like this series is going to be a much different series than we saw out of that series against Toronto. It right off the hop in game one, it gets physical. It gets, you know, there's been some snarl to it already. You got Marchand snapping Cam Atkinson's stick and trash talking Riley Nash a little bit. This feels like more of your stereotypical playoff series where it's going to be smash and grind and, you know, pull out all the stops every single night of this series, because the Columbus plays a different game than Toronto does. And I think this matchup to me feels like a lot more like what I expect a Bruins team to look like when they're playing Columbus, as opposed to trying to keep up with a speed team like Toronto.
Well, stylistically, obviously, this is a lot more familiar for a team like the Bruins, but they can do a little bit of everything.
Sure.
They can play a grinding game. They can play a skill game. They can skate with you as well. They got a lot of depth. I think one of the things that I'm going to try and keep my eyes on as this series progresses is, what's the matchup down the middle going to look like? So in the last round, the Bruins had to contend with Tavares and Matthews down the middle. It's a little bit different here in this round, because you've got Matt Duchene, Pierre-Luc Dubois, who are 1-2 as their centers. That's a different matchup for guys like Bergeron. We'll see if David Krejci's in the lineup, or a guy like Charlie Coyle. The other thing is that, as far as the balance that Columbus plays with on the back end, you're going to see a lot of Seth Jones and Zach Werenski. David Savard is probably the third guy. I thought he had a very strong game in game one. Some key blocks. He was terrific for the team in the first round of the series. But how do the Bruins grind that group down? Because I think the other three defensemen that Columbus is going to deploy, I think you have an opportunity to exploit them.
Yeah, and if Nuttavaar, I mean, Nuttavaar supposedly is skating, so he's getting a little closer. He's a pretty good defenseman, but he's, you know, he's a four. So he kind of complements Savard on that, on the second pairing. But up front, they've got a lot of skill. Don't sleep on their skill. I mean, they've got the size. They've got some, you know, guys that can pound you. But the top couple of lines, there's some real good skill there. I mean, Atkinson scored 40 plus goals this year. Panarin's very capable. If you allow him to be, he's very capable. I mean, 87 points this season. He can put a lot of points up on the board. Duchesne had an outstanding round one. He was very quiet in game one. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these guys, Dubois, you know, he's a big guy who's got the ability to put up some points. I think you can take advantage of him at the other end of the ice. Still very young. But, you know, they've got some skill up front. There's no question. And, you know, then they've got some guys that can really grind it out. So this is, I mean, it's a good matchup. They're similar to the Bruins in some sense, in some ways, you know, where they don't mind the grinding game. They don't mind the physical game. And they're going to keep bringing it. There's no question. And I think that the Bruins can respond well. They need to respond well. You know, I listened to Bruce Cassidy's press conference yesterday, and he spoke of it a little bit, you know, just about when defensemen are going back, and you got to know who's on the ice. If a guy like Josh Anderson's on the ice, he can get there because he's fast enough and he's going to come in there quick. And, you know, you can't put yourself in a position. You got to ride into the boards with him. And in saying that, so you kind of slow up as you're going. You don't pull a Dougie Hamilton, mm-hmm. but you slow up as you're going back for a puck and you put him on your back. Okay, and you ride into the boards with them. You don't put yourself in a vulnerable position. It's easier said than done sometimes because of the timing of it. But, you know, and there's other ways you can kind of deflect him, get him on your back and deflect that hit. But if he's coming and he's on the ice, you got to know it. And maybe you can hold up a little bit for him. You get away with a bit more in the playoffs in terms of interference. You know, at least get in his way where he's got to make a roundabout route to get there. And you know, he can't make a straight line beeline for you. And McAvoy took a couple of hits, especially one in the third period, I think it was, mm-hmm. from Anderson. And those take its toll on you as a season goes, or as a series goes
but
on.
But I think also Columbus realizes this is a very different foe than they faced against in the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round. That in many ways, when Josh Anderson, Boone Jenner, Nick Foligno, Brandon Dubinsky, some of these guys, when they were bearing down, they cowered. When it came to that. And that was basically their Achilles heel and part of the reason that they're on the sidelines at this point. Right off the faceoff in game one, Chara steps up on Josh Anderson. Doesn't label him with a hit, but I think it's just a message. Hey, this is a different series. You're not going to be able to run roughshod the way you did in the first round.
It from a kind of historic perspective over the course of this, you know, this run and even dating back to, you know, the early part of the decade, it, to me, has always felt like when the Bruins play an opponent who is going to challenge you physically, who is going to get in your face, who's going to poke the bear, for, you know, as the cliche goes, that's when oftentimes they rise to that next level, that they respond to that a lot better than they do when they're playing a speed type of or finesse team. That's why I look at this series especially and say, not only, you know, not taking away from Columbus's skill, but this is a team that we saw it right off the bat. Guys getting in each other's faces. You know, there's some pushing and shoving after whistles and things like that. There's some testiness there. That gets this team's juices flowing, and it turns them, they're already a hardworking physical team, but I think it kind of pushes them beyond what they would do otherwise if they're playing a team that doesn't bring of intensity.
It does. I mean, they're going to be emotionally involved and invested. You know, if they were overthinking things in the first round against Toronto through the first five games, that's not going to happen here. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's certain things you got to keep an eye on. There's certain adjustments you make as the series goes on based on what they're doing. But, you know, you're engaged emotionally and physically in the series. And if you're not, you're going to get run right out of the building. So be ready. You know, Pastrnak's finding that out. He found it out. You know, they were physical on him. He's trying to find his game right now. You know, Marchand was certainly involved. And, you know, people are saying, Marchand can't do that. He can't do that. I got no problem with it. I really don't. I mean, you want to stick your stick in my feet on a face-off? I'm going to step on your stick. So what? You know, I mean, now who's to say it's not getting Atkinson off his game?
Sure.
I mean, I think Marchand can toe the line.
Been out of shape about
it. He was. I guess that was his favorite stick. I don't know. I mean, like, oh, God, it's just a stick. But he was upset.
Well, and I think that's a good
point. Lucky stick.
Because in the first round against the Lightning, the Columbus Blue Jackets were short six times. They were short four times in game one alone. So how do they handle some of the emotions as things get ratcheted up? Only four guys on that entire playing roster and not in the lineup have ever won a playoff round.
No, obviously, Marchand's got to, we've been through this, a thousand times. Look, there's a line. Okay, don't cross it type of thing. And that's going close. I mean, he could easily get an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. You're not going to call that there. I mean, that would take a lot to call that there in overtime. Now, when Atkinson comes back and gives him a shot at the faceoff circle and Marchand gets his stick up a little bit, you got to be careful there, right? Kind of took his stick across his chest, but you don't want to get him in the face, obviously. But it's just, I enjoy that. And I think that a guy like Marchand feeds off of it. And he was pretty good in game one. He wasn't on the score sheet, but he was pretty good in game one. So this is, we talked the secondary scoring. I'll go back to your point, Chud. The top line's going to do their thing. They'll end up on the score sheet at some point. But how important the secondary scoring is, especially when you're going against, if you think you can exploit some of the lower lines or actually some of the lower D pairs. Ironically said, though, Seth Jones was on the ice for all three Bruins goals, and he was probably the best defenseman on the ice for them.
Yeah.
But he was on the ice for all three goals. So I'd like to see them try to exploit some of those lower defensemen there and see if they can get after them. I mean, Harrington kind of hung in there, Glendening didn't play a lot, but they can get after those guys.
Jackets people will tell you that's probably the best they've seen Adam Glendening. But I think for the most part, he's going to see, the minutes are going to be very sparing. One of the guys who's on the sidelines is a guy like Ryan Murray who he's skating on his own. That's a significant loss for Columbus. They're essentially missing three guys on the back end.
McQuaid,
and Ryan Murray. That would make a difference in this playoff series. They're unavailable, so they're going to have to make do with some of their depth.
The Bruins are without Kevin Miller. And,
right.
And you think he would enjoy this series?
He would eat this up.
All right, we start there. We'll get to your calls coming up throughout the course of the 2 hours today, 617-779-0985, as we get started here on another playoff edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Press the right hand, save. Let's go!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, joined in studio by Judd Surratt and Bob Beers. All right, so Bruins win game one here over the Columbus Blue Jackets. What was the biggest takeaway from the game?
Love the Bruins start. Columbus came out predictably rusty. They got going as the game went on. They were better as the game went on. They got more physical as the game went on. They got into it. There were some unforced errors by the Bruins, I thought. I get it if they're being forced into plays and, there's going to be pressure from Columbus. But, even Charlie Coyle's play that led to the first Columbus goal. He's got the puck in the neutral zone. He kind of settles things down. Now he's coming back towards the zone. He tries to make a pass through a stick, instead of maybe just going back to the strong side D or turning up, one or the other. And hey, it hits the shaft of the stick, and all of a sudden the puck's in the back, eventually the puck is in the back of the net. So it was great that he was able to atone for it and had a couple of goals. He had the tying goal and the game-winning goal, obviously. So it was good to see there. But there were some mistakes, just which are going to happen. You understand that? Some of the unforced errors are the ones that kind of get me. Well, you got full control of the puck and there is no pressure and you turn it over. So, hey, it's going to happen. How do you come through it? There are certain errors, certain guys, we mentioned Pastrnak already that you like to see get going offensively. I'm curious to see what happens with him if Krejci can't go. Or even if he can and he's a little banged up, do they move Pastrnak up with Bergeron? Do they try to get him going that way and maybe move some other pieces around on the other line? So I think you might see a little bit of changes here from Boston today. With or without Krejci injury.
Sure. So just from the goaltender out, I thought Rask was terrific. You didn't see, obviously, as much activity, but he made some big timely saves, especially late in that first period. Penalty killers.
No chance on either goal, by the way. I mean, there's no, the backdoor pass on the tip on the goal, and then, one that hits Dubois in the back of the leg or the rear end and it goes in the net. I mean, he's got no chance on that on the change of direction. So he made the saves he needed to make, and a couple that were difficult. The one on Dzingo was a great save when the score was still 1-0, I believe, in the first period. And that was, I think, Chara turned that puck over.
Yeah, that was, the Chara turnover. Yep.
Penalty kill was terrific. I think very quietly they're starting to get some traction. I went back and watched the two goals that Marcus Johansson set up to Charlie Coyle. Those are some high-end plays. Spectacular. Yes, there are some breakdowns that take place from Columbus in order to allow those goals to happen, but those are some slick feeds. And then I think the other thing is, so the Bruins, they carried most of the game. Yes, Columbus started to get their legs in the second period. You have two goals that go in very quickly, at around 7.5 minutes into the third period. But you also saw some resilience from the Bruins. I think you get an idea of, hey, this team faced three different game deficits in that first round against the Toronto Maple Leafs. But they weren't rattled. In Columbus, I don't know how well they managed the lead late in the game. Were they coming out, making the plays, using the middle of the ice, getting pucks deep? Not necessarily. And the Bruins took advantage, unfazed. They weren't rattled by the way that Sergei Bobrovsky was playing. They get the equalizer, win it in overtime.
Strong penalty kill, including a shorthanded goal for the Bruins. They were very strong in that department. And Columbus had a good power play in the first round against Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay was the best team in the league in killing penalties during the season. So the Bruins did a good job there. And Noel Chara gets them on the board. Power play had an opportunity late second, early third, and then another one in the third to try to get try to put them ahead 2-0. They weren't able to do it. So, good on Columbus's PK, but, like to see a little bit more from the Bruins power play as well.
Judd, you mentioned
they had some chances. It wasn't like they didn't have chance, but just a little bit more.
Judd, you mentioned the resiliency, and I after the game, I think it was Tuca, I'm not sure exactly, but he was asked about how you rebound from two goals against in 13 seconds, that you go from one down to one up that quickly. And he said, unfortunately, it's happened to us a lot where we go into these kind of stretches where we give up a couple of goals real quick, or we have to, suddenly we're behind and, we have to rebound from that. And that's, it really is. I mean, if you go back over the course of the season, there are a lot of situations where you can count where this team had to battle back from being behind going into the third period, or they give up a couple of quick goals and, suddenly everybody's kind of hanging their heads and they have to find a way to focus. And we saw that right off the bat in game one. They give up those bang bang goals. And as Bob said, neither one of them is Tuca's fault, but it's still kind of, it deflates the entire building. And it's like, okay, how do we get this thing back going again?
Oh, so now we're talking about, so basically we're talking about adversity during the course of the season you have to be able to work through.
Yeah.
Some other teams that experienced some of that adversity in the playoffs, they're not playing in the playoffs anymore. So,
well, some teams that lack that
right
adversity during the regular season are sitting home.
I don't remember having that conversation in the booth maybe in the last 2 months of the season, but we certainly had it during the course of the season, even when the Bruins started to elevate their play. But it was something that they worked through. Okay, what are our shifts like right after goals are scored, whether it's for or against? Hey, we have to make sure that we're on our game because, listen, those goals are going to sway a lot of the momentum. But the Bruins battle-tested, had gone through it, unfazed, continued to play, continued to execute. They win the game.
It's just a lack of panic, right? I mean, it's you don't see them, until they get into a position where you really have to go all out, you're not going to see them change their game.
Well, and that's playoff metal. That's something that for teams that have not gone through it, they have to kind of learn it on the fly. For teams that have either been through it in the past or experience it in the current playoffs that they're in, they're going to have an advantage.
617-779-0985. We got a lot more to get to here. Obviously, we've just scratched the surface of that game against the Blue Jackets the other night. We'll look forward to game two and talk a little bit about some of the adjustments that we will see tonight and going forward in this series. We'll also talk about how the Bruins managed to battle back and win that game, that series rather, against the Toronto Maple Leafs. So all that coming up as we continue here on another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
This is where Boston talks hockey. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on the home of the Bees, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub and the Hockey Show continues. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you here on a Saturday morning. And now we turn to the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline and welcome in Joe Haggerty of NBC Sports Boston. Good morning, Hags.
Good morning.
Well, I said I was a little concerned that we wouldn't necessarily be back here. I know you weren't. You didn't think we were going to be back here this week.
No, and I heard about that in my mentions on Twitter, too, by the way.
I'm sure you probably did once or twice.
It was a dumpster fire in there for a day or two, but that's all good. I mean, hey, look, given the way that that series had gone, I didn't expect the Bruins to be able to win that Game 7, how well, for most of it, the Toronto would play. But a lot of things changed, or a few things changed, very key things changed in Game 7 for the Bruins to win that was different from what we'd seen earlier in the series. And give the Bruins credit. They stepped up, including my boy Tuukka Rask. He played extremely well.
Well, if you would have told me that, you know, going into Game 7, that Bergeron, Pastrnak, Marchand, like, they weren't going to figure into the scoring until Bergeron's, you know, empty net goal at the end, that you were going to need Nordstrom and Johansson and Corrali to, you know, to be your goal scorers, and you know, and even in Game 1 of this series, that Charlie Coyle and Nola Chari were going to be the only two guys that scored goals, I would have thought you were in some serious trouble in those games. And yet, here we are. I mean, the depth of this team is paying off.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's what I was referencing. Like, the trends changed in that Game 7. You know, throughout the last two playoff series between the Bruins and the Leafs, if Pastrnak, Marchand, and Bergeron score, the Bruins win. If they didn't score, the Bruins lost. And you know, the fate of their games and their playoff lives was very dependent on those players producing. And that changed in Game 7. Sure, Bergeron got that empty net goal with a second to go in the game, but that didn't factor into anything. You know, it was about the bottom six, the third and fourth line, stepping up and providing all that offense. It was about Tuukka Rask playing extremely well and really having the best Game 7 he's ever had in his history of playoff performances. And, you know, the Bruins continuing that in Game 1 against Columbus, where it really feels like they're onto something with Charlie Coyle and Marcus Johansson and the chemistry that they're developing together. And it's also extremely apparent, and it was in the middle of that Toronto series, that Sean Corrali is a difference maker. You know, I know the Bruins talked about missing him at the start of the series and how important that was that he wasn't in there, and they were going to have to make up for it. And, you know, a lot of people, when you talk about the fourth line center, will kind of roll their eyes and say, yeah, you're not going to miss him that much. You can replace a player like that. But it was obvious watching the first few games of that series, watching how the fourth line was operating, that they absolutely did miss him. They missed his skating. They missed his energy. They missed his two-way play, his size, his clutch ability to score goals in big moments. You know, he brings a lot to the table in the playoffs, and I think we saw that once he got healthy and jumped back in. And, you know, that makes a difference when the Bruins have their fourth line going the way they did during the regular season.
What's going on with David Pastrnak?
Good question. Good question. He insisted yesterday he was 100%. He was healthy. Very quick with his answers about that. I'm not necessarily sure I believe him. And, you know, credit to him for playing through something, if that's indeed what he was doing. The best guess I can make is that, you know, he played really physical at the start of that Toronto series. Maybe he either injured something or re-injured or re-aggravated something while doing that. And, you know, he clearly doesn't look like the guy that he was through the entirety of the regular season. And to me, it looks like he's hesitant to shoot at times. It looks like he's off target when he shoots at times. It looks like his shots are getting blocked a lot more. It looks like he's, you know, just not comfortable shooting and holding on to the puck and really being strong on the puck like he was a lot during the regular season. And you wonder, if there's either something wrong with the thumb that he had worked on, before the playoffs started towards the end of the regular season, or something wrong with one of his hands. But it seems to me like he's not 100%. I have my wonders about Patrice Bergeron and if something's bothering him as well. And really, you know, you hate to say this or you hate to sort of put it this way, but you do wonder if that ultimately is the thing down the road that, you know, with the path wide open for the Bruins right now, with them, you know, really having a legit, obviously they're favorites of the teams that are left and having a real legit chance to have a path to go all the way to the Stanley Cup final. Injuries are, I think, the only thing or one of the few things that could really take this team down at this point. When you start seeing some of their best players looking less than 100% or looking like they're playing through stuff, that, you know, starts to raise a caution flag with you.
Well, speaking to that, how concerned should we be about the David Krejci situation?
Yeah, you know what? I certainly there's concern. It looked to me like the shoulder took the brunt of that hit, and that, you know, they're saying day to day. We'll see if he's at morning skate. We'll see if he's going to play. But if he starts to miss time, I think that becomes a concern. You know, he's a tough guy. You know, he's a prime time playoff performer, and that he's the kind of guy that's going to be in there if he can. And if he starts missing games, and it's, you know, something of significance, that obviously affects a lot of what the Bruins do. Are they going to have to bump up Charlie Coyle, the second line center? Are they going to decide to put Pastrnak back with Bergeron and Marchand? There's a lot of different ways they can go with that if all of a sudden Krejci's out of the lineup. But the bottom line is you're missing one of your most important players, one of the anchors in your lineup that you design your whole roster around, is having that strength 1-2 in your top six at the center position. And I think he's played very, very well. And to have the season that he's had, to know what he can do in the playoffs and what he's capable of and what he can do under pressure, and all of a sudden you start missing that, it's a significant loss for the Bruins if they don't have him. And, you know, it's amazing to me, as it was to Brad Marchand yesterday, that it's Riley Nash, of all people, that threw that hit that might take him out for a little while if he's indeed injured.
We were talking off the beginning of the show today about the personality that's already starting to form in this series, right? I mean, the kind of the little snarl in that game one, and, you know, Marchand trash-talking Riley Nash after his hit on Krejci the other night. His little run-in with
stick stomping there too. Right?
Little run-in with Cam Atkinson in overtime there as well. You know, it makes me really excited to see kind of how this series goes, because it feels like, you know, this is going to be a real intense physical series. And, you know, even some of the comments off the ice now are, you know, even after game one, I can't wait to see what's going to happen after these teams have a few more games under their belt.
Yeah, we anticipated going in, right, that these are two physical teams. These are two teams that aren't afraid to you know, turn it into an alley fight. And certainly they play hard, and they want to play strong in the defensive zone, and they have a certain attitude that they play with. And, you know, the personalities like Marchand and John Tortorella, and, you know, the people that are involved in this series, I don't think either side's going to back down from the other, and they want to play that way. So you expect the temperature to rise in these games. You expect there to be a lot of nastiness that's going to continue to develop, and some hatred that's really going to develop between these two teams over the course of, I think, what we expect to be a long playoff series. I mean, it looked to me like after that first period, when clearly the Blue Jackets were not up to the playoff level after being off for 9 days, that they got there in the second and third period. And I thought it was a very even game in the second and third period. And I think we're going to see that throughout the series. So, you know, just the fact that after being basically a choir boy in the first round, Brad Marchand is, you know, chirping. He's obviously trying to get in the heads of guys like Cam Atkinson and, you know, do his agitator thing. And he's fully engaged here. I think that tells you that the players recognize, too, that things are going to get awfully nasty on the ice. And, you know, the other part of it, too, I think, is I think Brad Marchand's going to do some of this stuff, and the Bruins are probably going to try to push the Blue Jackets around a little bit because they've never been here before, right? You know, there's guys on the Bruins that have been to the second round, been to the conference finals, been to the Stanley Cup finals, won the Stanley Cup. Very few guys on the Blue Jackets roster that have done any of that stuff, and most of them have not even been to the second round. So I think you're going to see even more experience come out for the Bruins here, trying to goad the Blue Jackets into doing things and trying to use some of that experience and savvy that they have to gain an advantage over a very playoff and experienced Blue Jackets team.
Joe Haggerty, NBC Sports Boston, appreciate the time as always.
You got it, guys. Take care.
He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. We've got more coming with Judd and Bob as we continue here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. 617-779-0985. You can jump in with us.
The Bruins, the NHL. This is the show that's all hockey.
He scores!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Sirai, and Bob Beers. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub Hockey Show, 617-779-0985. If you want to jump in with us, Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, and Bob Beers with you. Bruins and Columbus Game 2 coming up tonight. And as we were talking, guys, about the end of the Toronto series and on into the series now against Columbus, and one of the things that jumps out at you over the course of the last couple of games especially is the depth of scoring. I mean, they're getting goals from their third and fourth line guys with regularity, and that's carried them on to wins. But top line guys, second line guys, you know, the Bergerons, Marchands, Jake DeBrusks, you know, David Krejcis of the world, being held off of the score sheet. We're going to get into some of those guys individually at first, but when we were here last week, Bob, you said something about Patrice Bergeron coming off of Game 4 where he had only played 14 minutes and change.
Oh. Yeah, and, I mean, and that's Game 4. Judd had pointed it out to me in the booth, and I was surprised because I guess I didn't realize it as the game was going on, and you know, you knew that something was going to be bothering. That was Game 4, and yes. The Bruins won that game 6-4, I think it was. But, and then you kind of watch him, something's bothering him, you know something's bothering him. The last couple of games, he's been back. You know what I mean? I thought he played a really strong game against Columbus. I thought he made some great defensive plays coming back and you know, stripping guys of pucks. And that's a great sign for the Bruins. But there was something bothering him during that Toronto series, and it looks like he's been able to play through it at least to a certain degree. And that's just watching from where we watch. That's, you know, nothing to, no conversations or anything, but that's just from where we sit, it looks like he's a lot more comfortable out there.
I think the depth started to show up later in that Toronto series. That was one of the things that Bruce Cassidy and I had talked about on one of the pregame shows. As the series had gone longer, I thought more and more Bruins got involved. And one of the things he pointed out is they started to add guys to the lineup. Corrali came back in.
Oh, he's such a big part of that team.
John Moore helped you out on the back end. You had Marcus Johansson, who had to deal with a bout of the flu. He started to obviously play a little bit better as that series progressed. So you have 14 different Bruins who have registered at least one goal here in the playoffs thus far. And you only had one that was added to that mix in Nola Cherry. So you had 12 different Bruins score goals in that series against the Maple Leafs. So I think that you started to really sense it from your team. And for Bergeron, what you wanted from that group is, you know what? Take away John Tavares, Mitch Marner, and Zach Hyman. And they were able to do that successfully, you know, other than the last game. And really, Bergeron was not on the ice for that goal and really had no...
They got better as the series. As the series went on, they got better. You know, I know that they had that angry game too. But there was something missing early in the series overall for them, and they got better as the series went on. And certainly when their backs were against the wall, they were at their best. And I thought Game 6 was excellent for them, the way that they played up there, and that was probably their most complete game, I think, that they played. And they followed up a good, strong Game 7. There were some mistakes there, but hey, you know, it's a Game 7. You expect some of those. And you're playing against good teams right now, so there are going to be mistakes. It's like you can't, you know, you look at it and say, oh, like, what's this guy doing? But, you know,
sure,
you're playing against good teams that are going to force you into some of these mistakes. And so it's how you manage them, how you handle them, and, you know, how you adjust to them moving forward.
I think the reason it stands out so much is that unit, the Bergeron line, was so dominant against that same team last year. and you didn't get that same level against them this year. Obviously, Toronto has gotten better since last year. We saw that.
You didn't have Jake Muzzin last year.
Sure.
You didn't have that defensive pairing that was their job to shut them down. Jake Muzzin is a good defenseman. He had a pretty good series for the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, last year they went against Hainsey and Riley.
That's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is, so one of the things heading into the series, I think when I was on with Felger and Maz, they asked, okay, who do you want to see more from? And obviously the first two guys that you point to are DeBrusque and Pasternak. And I only say that because the Bruins take their game to another level. You know, if those two guys are engaged, you're already getting terrific play out of Charlie Coyle. We've seen Marcus Johansson's game rise. Listen, I think Marchand and Bergeron have been solid throughout this playoff run. But when those two guys get engaged up front, then I think that the Bruins can start to put teams in their rearview mirrors. And as the sample size gets bigger, while Jake only has one goal and Pasternak has two and they came in the same game, the sample size is going to get bigger. These are good players. You're going to hear from them.
Well, you're going to hear from them. I mean, one of the hallmarks of this team is that, you know, for as much as we kind of complained or wondered about, you know, who's going to be the third line center on this team and the fact that the third line for a lot of the year was missing, this team still is a deep team. I mean, they have, you know, at least three and now four lines that they can attack you with in a number of different ways. And when you look at some of the teams that they come up against, I mean, you talked about how, you know, kind of the depth improved or it rose to the occasion as that Toronto series went on, as you got deeper into the series. Some teams are going to be able to do that. Some teams are going to be able to throw different looks at you and have different lines that can be going on different nights and they can beat you in different ways. But most teams, it's like, if their top line or two aren't going, they're not going anywhere.
Well, you know, you look at, but there's another side to that as well. And yeah, you want to see them get going offensively. You know, I'm just looking at some numbers from that game one. You know, Matt Duchene had no shots on goal in that game. You know, I didn't really notice him a whole lot, okay? Mm-hmm. And you look at who was taking all the faceoffs against Matt Duchene. And Bergeron took six faceoffs against Duchene. Sean Corrali took four faceoffs against Duchene. Krejci didn't take any. Coyle didn't take any. So, you know, there's a reason
he
gets...
Right,
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. And, you know, he's a valuable player. He had a very good first round, and he's going to be a factor. He's going to be a factor, but you have to keep getting in his face and closing him down, just like they did to Panarin in that game. They did a good job on Panarin. I know he had an assist on the second goal. He was given a little space there, but, you know, that was right following the first goal. You know, what? How many seconds later? 13 seconds later?
13.
So, but he didn't have a lot of room in that game. I thought the Bruins did a real good job on him and Duchene.
All right, we will continue. We got a whole another hour still to go. 617-779-0985. Questions, comments, etc. We will get Sports Hub headlines here. We'll talk a lot more about this series as it continues or just gets underway and continues to develop tonight in Game 2. It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning.
Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, hour number two here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston and Bob Beers with you. Judd Zarat is on his way over to morning skate. Getting ready for game two tonight, which, of course, you can hear right here on the Sports Hub with Judd and Bob on the call. All right, I asked this of Hags. I'll ask it of you. What's going on with David Pasternak? I mean, he's got two goals in the postseason, both in one game. He does not look himself at all. Passing up shots, making strange decisions, turning the puck over a lot. What's going on?
Well, let's go on the assumption. Let's go on the assumption that he's healthy. Which is what he said. Yes. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean it's true, but it's okay. Let's go on the assumption that he's healthy. So we've seen him at different times of the year where and he's a scorer, right? I mean, he's a guy that can put the puck in the net. When scores don't score, they tend to overthink it, right? So you're passing up shots when you know you've got an opportunity. You're trying to make that perfect play. You're overthinking it a bit. You're missing the net. You're squeezing your stick. You know, all the cliches that go along with, you know, a streaky score. He's also being checked a lot closer, And you're playing against good teams that are able to do that. I didn't give Toronto enough credit coming into the series. They certainly opened my eyes a little bit about the way that they defended. They defended better in that series. So, you know, they got in his face. They tried to be real physical with him. You know, guys were finishing their hits on him every chance they got. Columbus is certainly going to do the same thing. So they're doing the same thing that the Bruins tried to do on Panarin in the game the other day. They're doing the same thing that they tried to do on Marner. What did Marner do after game? Was it one?
Yeah.
There are a few games he didn't even have a shot on goal.
Pretty
right?
quiet.
So,
yep.
Yeah. So, you know, and he actually, Marner did a pretty good job of not taking any real big hits that I remember, maybe one or two, but nothing big. And Pastrnak's taken a couple of pretty decent hits, and, you know, but I give him credit for going in the corners and battling. But he goes back, now he looks to me like kind of a guy maybe a couple years ago where he's getting knocked off the puck a little bit too much. So fight through some of those hits, continue to win those battles, you know, make good plays coming out of your own zone, you know, and I think it will come for him. I really do, but still going on the assumption that he's healthy. But if he's healthy physically, then he's battling it mentally right now, trying to fight his way through it.
Well, that's been the kind of question is when I watch him and I see, you know, a guy who's a scorer who's passing up shots where they're there. I mean, he's been in positions where he's had clean looks at the net. He's not shooting. That's when I start to wonder. Like, is his hand bothering him when he shoots or something like that?
I don't think so. I think we saw enough of that later in the regular season. You know, he's shooting the puck all right. But there'll be times during the season where, you know, that top line is trying to figure it out. And they're together. And you can see that they're just off a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, they're passing when they should shoot, trying to pass through skates, trying to pass through sticks, or trying to beat a guy one-on-one when you should be moving it to somebody and getting it back. You know, and we do the coach's interview, you know, every game, and we'll ask Bruce Cassidy, okay, you know, what do you see from this line? Because the expectations are so high. And, you know, they just say they'll figure it out, you know, and sooner or later they do. So you're kind of waiting for that to happen, but they're not playing together. And that's why I'm curious. You know, there's shifts here and there. You know, they'll try to get a couple of extra shifts here and there to try to get them going. Certainly playing together on the power play, but you know, he's just a little off right now, and if he's healthy, he'll find his way through it. He's got to figure out how to play through the tight checking that is the playoffs. You know, he did whatever he wanted against Toronto last year. They were terrible defensively.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now they're better this year, and he's having a little tougher time finding that open ice and finding the opportunities. And the same thing with Columbus. So you're going to play against tight checking teams. You got to fight your way through it.
You kind of alluded to this early on in the show, but I wanted to circle back around to it. We don't know the status of Krejci right now, but could getting Pastrnak back online, could getting him back with Bergeron be what wakes him up? Whether Krejci's healthy enough to go today or not, is that a move that you would consider making at this point? Because at bare minimum, if you've got a guy who's in his own head, you get him back into his comfort zone, which is where he's been most of the year.
Yeah, and especially on home ice where they control the matchups. So, yeah, I think it's something to be considered. That's okay. Go on the assumption that Krejci can't play today. You know, what do the lines look like? My best guess would be that they move Coyle up to a second line center. But do they keep Johansson with him on the wing, and they maybe drop DeBrusk down and move Corrali into the third line center? You know, those are all, you know, things that kind of you guess might happen. I highly doubt that somebody from Providence would step in there to play in that situation, center. They did get knocked out yesterday.
Yeah.
But I doubt that they would throw somebody from them in there. It's possible, but my guess is Corrali would kind of move up and Coyle would move up. And Achari fourth line center. But, you know, I think for the Bruins, especially when they can control the matchups here on home ice, and you've got a couple of days between games 2 and 3, so a little shorter bench today, depending on how the game is going. I think that you'll see a lot of looks with Pastrnak up with Bergeron as the game goes on. Heinen has done a pretty good job there.
I was going to ask you about that.
He's got there's parts in games where he doesn't play a lot, and it's, you know, whether it's like in the second period or, you know, where they shorten the bench a bit in the second period and he doesn't get as much ice time. Maybe it was because of the penalties. I'm not sure. He's not playing power play right now. He's not killing penalties. Mm-hmm. So when you come back from a power play, he has a set line that he uses, and it's usually the Corrali line. When he comes back from a penalty kill, he has a set line that he uses, or Cassie does. So Heinen might find himself on the outside, you know, kind of waiting for – he's on Bergeron's line. He doesn't play power play. He doesn't play penalty kill. So when you're coming off of those special team situations, Bergeron's line's not being used.
Sure.
So he has to sit through the rotation again. So, you know, there's a couple different reasons, I think, for it, that why he doesn't play as much. But I think he's done a pretty good job when he's been in there. Certainly made a great play on the game-winning goal in overtime. Staying on side and then making the good backhand pass over to Johansson. Do you break Johansson and Coyle up? Doubtful.
I mean, they're doubtful. Going. They, you know, we talk.
They, you know, if they move up, they're going to see a different, you know, different. They scored their goals against Seth Jones and Werenski. So
sure.
You know, they saw the depth deep there when they scored their goals. But you know, when Lyon was on the ice, and you know, there's some. You love the depth of the Bruins when Krejci's in there, and you take him out of the equation. He was real good in the faceoff circle in game one. Coyle wasn't as good in the faceoff circle in game one as Krejci was. Bergeron was 10-10, but he's going against Duchesne a lot. Duchesne's very good in the circle. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's all these little different things you kind of look at coming into today's game, and that's stuff that they're dissecting now as they get ready for it. But it's matchup-wise, a couple days off between your next game, opportunity to take a 2-0 lead, knowing that Columbus is going to come in here flying, you know, the Krejci status up in the air, you know, a lot to look at coming in.
I mean, I want to go back to you. You brought up Danton Heinen, and not taking anything away from him, but he's a different kind of player than David Pastrnak is on that line. What does that do to the dynamic of that group as far as, look, you know, we haven't seen in the Toronto series the kind of production, but we covered that already. But having him on that line as opposed to Bergeron, I understand, you know, the effort to try and balance out the scoring through the lineup, because that turned into a problem last year when they basically only had one line going. But what does Danton Heinen bring to that equation if you, you know, keep him with that Bergeron line? And you said you thought, you know, he's played pretty well. It's not, you know,
he's done some good things. Yeah. He's reliable. You know, he's certainly not as dynamic, but he's reliable and he's capable of making good offense. He's capable of winning battles. He's capable of making plays. You know, he's reliable on the wall and in the defensive zone. He's reliable winning pucks in the offensive zone. So, you know, he doesn't get knocked off his feet that much, that often. You know, so he's a guy that I think is a nice compliment to that line. He's not Pastrnak, but he's a nice compliment to that line. And if they want to spread things out, you know, who's your better option up there? With Bergeron, right? I don't think there is one.
Right. I mean, you don't have a tremendous amount of depth at that right wing position to lean on.
Kuhlman, Backes, these are your right wingers. Heinen's, you know, they like him better on the third line left wing. But out of necessity, he's got to go play. He plays there. So, you know, and if Pastrnak's playing on the top line, then who plays right wing with Krejci? So that's, I mean, we've had this discussion all season long. We had it before the season. You know, who's going to be on that right side? You know, they address the third line center, and they address the overall depth with Coyle and Johansson coming in, paid dividends in game one, and has paid dividends at different times here. Coyle's had a very good playoff so far. Johansson's starting to get, he looks healthier, you know, definitely more engaged and healthier in the last few games. So all good signs for Boston, but right wing.
Paul, you're up here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. I have to believe that it's probably more of a physical issue with Pasta. You know, obviously, as you mentioned, he plays with Tater in the playoffs. The last thing I want to think about, and it's hard not to with, you know, with any of the, you know, foreign European players, it's hard not to think about a Rossy Rozicka or a Dmitry Kartanov that had success for a short period of time, and then as things got tighter and tougher, you know, they kind of, not softened, but, you know, just they changed. I don't want to put that into that thought process yet, but it's hard not to. But I got to believe it's probably more physical. It's also more, you know, there's something going on possibly with Pastor in terms of health-wise, some extra stuff that he was going through, you know, the month and a half ago. But I'm sure they'll figure it out. But I hope for the best and hopes that this is not nothing new softness, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Bob addressed that a little bit. And I said, you know, when I watch him passing up shots, I kind of wonder about, you know, the health too. But at the same time, what you said made a lot of sense as far as just kind of being in his own head. And yeah, because we're seeing him make decisions that we don't usually see him make. And that's a guy who's, as you said, overthinking things a little bit, right?
That's my take on it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a simplistic look at it, but it's, you know, we've seen him struggle before. It's not like the first time we've seen him struggle. And when I say struggle, we've seen him get in a little slump where it goes for a few games and then he pops out of it. But you're also going against better players right now. You're going against the iron. You're going against the top players in the league. And I look at last year, and I'll go back to it again, I'll repeat it, but Toronto was terrible defensively. So that line could do whatever they wanted. They tightened up defensively this year. And so it was harder to get through with some of those guys. And Columbus is a decent defensive team. They're a physical team, and they're going to be in your face a lot. They know that they have to be in Pastrnak's face. And that's, you know, they finish every hit on him, make it hard on him. That's what you say against all the skill guys, make it hard on them. And as a young player, part of it is navigating your way through that. And once you get through it, you know, Marchand's been able to do it. You know, he's had guys in his face, you know, his whole career for a lot of reasons, you know, but he's figured out a way. But there's times during the season where those guys, you know, they'll try to do too much. They'll try to beat guys one-on-one, or they'll try to, like I said, pass through skates. And, you know, there's other options there. And then once it clicks, you know, they're back, and all of a sudden you start to see them take off.
617-779-0985. We can take more of your calls. There are a couple of other key players that we haven't really gotten into yet. We'll get to those coming up next as Ryan Johnston and Bob Beers continue here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Press the right pants in. Let's go!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Sports Hub Hockey Show, Ryan Johnston, joined by Bob Beers here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. Game 2, Bruins and Columbus coming up tonight. I asked the hour before the hockey show came on, I threw the question out to the listeners, how are you feeling about your goaltender right now? I mean, I know Tuukka takes a lot of crap around here. But we have seen him go on playoff runs before, most notably in 2013, where he was terrific getting you to the Stanley Cup final. I'm not sure you can ask a whole lot more out of him, out of what you've seen here over the last few games against a really dangerous Toronto team in back-to-back must-win games. He was excellent. And in a game where you needed him, because Bobrovsky was phenomenal in game one, Tuukka saved everything he possibly could have saved the other night.
Yep. And he made a couple of high end saves as well. And keeping the game, you know, a reference to save he made on Dzingel. And that's when the game was 1-0 in the first period after a turnover. He made a save on Dubois on a breakaway. There were some other high end saves that he made, and just to preserve the lead, because, yeah, Bobrovsky was doing his job down at the other end. No question, unreal saves that he made. He's a lot more active in the net than Tuukka is.
I was going to bring that up.
They're very different styles.
I think it's one of the reasons that some people believe that Tuukka is not that great is because he's not acrobatic. He's not diving around. Well, he's not.
He can.
But he's not making.
It's not typical, though.
Those types of saves regularly. When you look at Bobrovsky, you know, some of the things that he was doing the other night, they're spectacular saves, but oftentimes that's a sign of a goaltender who's just hanging on by his fingernails, and Tuukka to me has looked very much in control, you know, of himself.
But Bobrovsky's been done that, and you know that's why he's won a Vezina.
Sure.
We had a goalie here before Tuukka that looked like he was hanging on by his fingernails half the time.
Yeah.
But he was pretty effective at it. Goalies have different styles. Everybody gets it done a little differently. Carey Price, when he's on his game, does he look like Bobrovsky? Or does he look more like Tuukka? He looks more like Tuukka.
He's a control. He looks in control.
He's in control.
Right?
Calm.
I mean, that's what has struck me, because
he's capable of making those unbelievable saves, but he looks calm most of the time.
Right. Well, just, you know, in for a good chunk of that Toronto series, and then again the other night, Tuukka, even when those back to back goals go against him, which again neither one is his fault, but it didn't get in his head. Like, he still looks like he's carrying himself confidently. The pucks are hitting him. He's in the right position. He's on his angles. Like, it feels like he's in the zone right now. He's confident that he can stop anything thrown his way.
Yeah, and conversely, you know, there was times earlier this season when pucks were just leaking through him. You know, every game there was at least one that you're like, oh, you know, I wish he would have had that. You know, the puck just leaked through him. And, you know, softer goals.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen that. The goals that they've scored have been good goals. And Matthews was a good, you know, the one that leaked kind of threw him a little bit. It is Austin Matthews shooting, and he was shooting from the dot, you know, through an outstretched stick of Chara. You know, so that puck can get off his stick in a hurry. Sometimes you have to give the shooter a little benefit of the doubt. And a guy that's got 40-plus goals, you know, Tavares, the other day, I thought that shot got altered, actually, a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, but that the one that beat him blocked. And he actually talked about it. You know, when a player's shooting, you know, the goalie has a pretty good read on where it's going to go most of the time. But if he's shooting, and as he's following through, somebody's kind of chopping at the shaft of the stick, it's going to alter where the shot goes.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see the game 6 overtime goal shorthanded by Hurdle?
Yeah.
San Jose against Vegas? Same thing. Theodore's coming back on the play, and instead of going, you know, stick on puck, instead of trying to alter the shot that way, or, you know, contest the shot that way, he slashed the stick, the shaft of the stick, as Hurdle was shooting, and Fleury was fooled on it because of it. So, you know, there's different little things that happen, and, you know, it's not every goal, a lot of goals that, you know, a lot of goals go in off of something, or they're altered or something, you know, like that. There are the ones that are shot from an area that should be saved. You know, those are the ones that were happening earlier in the season for a period of time. And then he got real good as the season went on, dipped maybe a little bit on some of the games. They were hoping he could steal a couple games. But now he's locked in. He's dialed in. He's played really well here in the playoffs, especially he's gotten better as the team has gotten better, I think, throughout this playoff.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely the Bruins got better as that series went on against Toronto, and they carried it over into the game one.
Well, it's part of the reason we talk so much about, like, getting traffic to the net, you know, and all of that, is that the old cliche that an NHL goaltender is going to stop almost everything that they can see, or that doesn't get deflected, or right. I mean, it's the truth.
He's going to have to fight his way through a lot of stuff he can't see, and he's going to have to try to find pucks. I mean, Columbus is going to get guys to the front of the net. They have to. They every coach talks about getting to the inside, right? Winning the slot battle, getting to the inside, getting to the top of the blue paint, making it hard on the goaltender, taking away his eyes. There's, you know, all those cliches that get thrown in there when you go up against good goaltenders, and that's the same thing with the Bruins and what they've got to do, you know, certain things against Bobrovsky. And if they do work them side to side, you know, he's so good at getting across. He just missed Coyle's goal, the game-tying goal, with that right pad almost coming across. But he made some unreal saves moving from side to side. You know, I thought Marchand had him beat in the second period it was, and he hit the crossbar, right? And that was a side-to-side play where he said, okay, I got to get this up. I had another former goalie tell me, you know, you can use five hole as well when he's that good at going side to side. Instead of trying to beat him inside the post, what's going to be exposed is five hole.
Mm-hmm.
So upstairs or five hole, if he's coming, you know, hit the middle of the net instead of trying to go just inside the post. So I thought that was interesting.
On the other end, mentioned Bobrovsky in the night that he had the other night. His career is not a great one in the postseason. No. I mean, that's...
Well, neither is Columbus.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at his numbers throughout the course of his career, he's got an .898 save percentage in the postseason and a 3.25 goals against average. how concerned? I mean, he gets off to a great start in the series. They don't win the game, but he gets off to a great start personally. What do you expect out of him in this series? Do you expect him to be the guy that he's been? Do you expect that he's going to be closer to the guy that we saw the other night?
He's the guy that wasn't rusty the other day and start the game, and it was fortunate for the Columbus Blue Jackets. You never know what you're going to get out of goalies. Ben Bishop was outstanding in the first round, and I saw him in one of the games let in just a couple of horrendous goals. But his numbers were off the charts, and Nashville couldn't score, and that's one of the reasons that Dallas moves on. He let in 2 5-hole goals the other day. If those goals go in against Tuukka, he's getting crucified right now. One of them's Tarasenko shooting the puck. If Noel Achary beats him far side shorthanded, everyone's going to be ripping Tuukka. Bobrovsky was outstanding in that game. Should you've had that one? I don't know, who knows what you're going to get from goaltenders? But it's from Bobrovsky's standpoint, he's like most goaltenders. He's shown the ability to steal games and be outstanding, and he can go the other way and become a little bit of a head case like he did this during the regular season. At times, he led the league where he had 9 shutouts. He was second in the league in wins, and there were times during the season where they couldn't count on him at all. He was letting in so many bad goals, and he was getting pulled from a game and leaving the bench and going down to the locker room and taking his equipment off. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff going on with him this year.
Well, and I mean, just the whole thing about what is he going to, was he going to stay?
He's an unrestricted
was he going to get traded away at the deadline? I mean, there was talk of that.
He's playing great at the right time.
Yeah. it just from that perspective, if you contrast what happened in the first period of the Tampa series when they got down 3-0 right off the bat versus what he did the other night. I mean, he gave them a chance to win that game the other night.
Well, he gave him a chance to win that game.
Because in the first period, they could have been down 3-0 again in the first period of game one.
And against Tampa, he made at least one unbelievable save to start the second period. A lot of people thought he'd get pulled after one.
Mm-hmm.
He made an unbelievable save to start the second period and allowed Columbus to kind of get going a bit, and then they believed, and they ended up, obviously coming back and winning that game and winning the series in 4 games. But, it should have been, a lot better than that, a lot more than 1-0 at that time. Yeah. But it was just him that kept him at that time. And we already mentioned it, but Tuukka made a couple of big saves himself in that first period once Columbus started to kind of towards the end of the first period.
Let's quickly get to John. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Thanks, guys. I know you're talking about Tuukka, and I know I call. I'm not a big Tuukka fan, but I'm going to leave him alone because I want this guy to do well. I'm calling Mr. Bears about your question about the right winger for the Krejci line. I think the answer to that, he's sitting right up on the 9th floor. I think David Backes is built for this type of series with Columbus because he's a heavy player, and it's like kind of playing right into his game. And I think he would make a difference if they actually put him in the lineup today. And I just wonder what your opinion would be on that. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate the call, John.
Yeah, I don't mind. I wouldn't mind seeing David Backes at all because I think he would help in this kind of series, and I think it'd be good for him. But at the same time, I don't think playing alongside David Krejci is the answer, though.
No, that's more of a third, fourth line guy who's going to get spot time. Yeah. It's not going to be a guy who's going to get, 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, so, but I do see, a guy like Backes being able to come in and make some kind of an impact. I think we'll see him in the series, and if Krejci's hurt, you may even see him today.
Well, when they got him into the Toronto series, that first game in the Toronto series, he made an impact right away, right? They brought him in to be
game
more
two.
Physical and help turn things up, and he did.
Yep, game two, exactly, and played a strong game in that one and was a big factor in that game. So, I don't know. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like he can play every game, but if you bring him in, once in a while, and as long as he brings it, and there's no reason to think he wouldn't. He's a pro, and he's, really well-respected in that room when he's on and off the ice. If you're missing a guy, if you're going to move, Corrali to center and move Coyle up, there's still a spot or your two extra forwards. So one of those two guys, you want to go with a little bit more speed in Kuhlman, who's played well when he's been in there, or do you want to go with a little more bulk like Backes?
Well, and as you said earlier, you got 2 days off coming up, so you can you know if you get one of those guys into the lineup tonight, you can shorten the bench if need be. If Backus can only go, you know, 8 or 9 minutes, this is a night where you can get away with that. Though. Absolutely. All right, Sports Hub headlines, and then we got one more half hour to go here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
This is where Boston talks hockey. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on the home of the Bees, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Sports Hub Hockey Show, Ryan Johnston and Bob Beers with you here on this Saturday morning. And right around this time each week, we welcome in Billy Jaffe, Nesson, NHL Network, and all points in between, especially around this time of year. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Good morning, Billy.
Good morning. How's everybody today?
Doing well. Busy time? You keeping, you got enough jobs?
Yeah, well, hey, got to pay the bill. Yes, got enough. Was the last few days at the NHL Network, in particular yesterday, I got to spend it at Barclays Center with the Islanders and Carolina game. Back home for Boston tonight. It's exciting time of year. I mean, this has been just nuts, this playoff series.
I miss the Nassau Coliseum, Billy. I'll say that.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. Yeah, that Barclays Center. I mean, it looks nice and it's in a hip area and everything, but it doesn't have the same vibe. I mean, the Islander fans packed it last night, but it's a disjointed arena as it is, and I don't know. It just doesn't feel right, but it is what it is.
How'd you like the goalie interference call last night?
It was, I would say it wasn't, I don't know what I say. It wasn't a penalty, I didn't think. Did you?
No. I thought it should have been a goal.
Right.
I watched replays of it this morning. I mean,
the officials are always saying that it. I know Bob. I'm so busy. I'm confused. I don't even know what to think anymore. About didn't we talk about this like a week or two ago? Is this the same conversation? Like the same exact thing? It's like I'm just so confused, and I try to get a real feel as to what is and what isn't. But Mrazek, it wasn't a penalty. I could have been a goal, but I never. I don't know anymore. That's the big we have a big problem. And I know, haven't we said this almost every year though, with when since replay's been, we have an issue with this and nothing seems to get done.
Well, it's just that everything gets heightened so much, right? I mean, everything is magnified, and that's not reviewable, right? My understanding. I mean, I watched the replay of it this morning because I didn't see it live last night, but I watched the replay of it this morning, and you know, he's getting pushed in. It's Lee, right? He's getting pushed into the Mrazek.
Pushed in by, was it Walmart? If I remember correctly, was it Walmart? Yeah, yes. Walmart did that. Yeah.
They allow the goal to stand, and then Carolina, you know, challenges it. I think the goal stands.
Probably.
But therein lies the problem with the whole system, right? Is that we sit
once
here
call a penalty, it's not reviewable.
Probably. Or maybe. That's part of the issue here is that nobody seems to really know for sure.
Right. So do we want to go do we want to go to even more replay to where just about everything is reviewable, or do we want to get rid of it? Which one? Where are we at? Because now we're in this conundrum. Now they're talking about reviewing major penalties. Because of the whole San Jose Shark Joe Pavelski incident against the Vegas Golden Knights from, what was it, Game 7? I don't know how many days ago that was. But now they're talking about that's what they do in college hockey. So do you guys want to see more replay or not? Because people just say, well, look, it's easy to do replay for pucks over glass, high sticks to make sure that your team, let's say I lift the stick of Beersy, but yet I hit myself with my own, they think it's his stick, but it's actually me that hits myself. They want to be able to review that, too. There are people that want that. I mean, it keeps being easy. Everybody says it's easy and easy and easy to review things, but next thing you know, we're going to review ourselves into boredom.
Well,
it's going to be crazy.
I've been on board with eliminating replay across all sports for a while now. I'm done with all of it. But go back to that last game of the San Jose Vegas series. I mean, it ends in spectacular fashion, obviously, and that call jumps out when you watch that game and say, okay, well, this potentially costs Vegas a chance to advance in the series, and San Jose takes advantage of it and they go on to win. I mean, at some point, you're going to have bad calls. There's nothing you can do about that, right? I mean, you even if you say that that's a reviewable play, who's to say that the officials get the next call right or the call after that? I mean, there are always going to be calls that people don't agree with. I don't see how there's a way you can eliminate that.
I couldn't agree with you more, but I seem to be in the minority. I don't know about you, but Beardsy, but when I was a young player playing, remember my dad would always just tell me, you got to play through everything, including missed calls, because the official going to miss one. You're going to have a bad play. You got to play through it. Your coaches are going to, I mean, all that. I mean, isn't it obvious? But we seem to, you know, we want officials to be perfect. And, you know, that's a tough, it's a crazy fast game. And, yeah, they did make a mistake in that San Jose game, but you got to learn how to play through it. That's what we always talk about, teams that are mentally sharp and mentally strong are the ones that end up winning.
That's on Vegas. That's on Vegas for not being able to kill the penalty. I mean, horrible call or not, it's on Vegas for not being able to kill it. The only time that you look at it is when it's a game-deciding goal and you think that they got it wrong. I mean, that's just this.
And you don't get a chance,
to back it up. But that's right. That's ultimately on Vegas, but no question. And I think the league, or at least the officials, the head of the officials agrees, because I don't think those two referees are working now.
They're not. Those two referees are not working this round. Neither are the officials that worked the game two of the Bruins-Toronto series. That were, the rumblings are that they were reprimanded after that game. And those two guys aren't working either. So especially that Vegas-San Jose game, fellas. Those were two guys that are veteran officials, veteran referees. That one of them, Danny O'Halloran, has worked, I don't remember how many consecutive conference finals, but a ton. Like something big, like 8 to 10 or something in a row. So he's legitimate top 5 ref in the NHL.
All right, let's get away from the officials and talk a little bit about the teams that are left here in the postseason. You mentioned that you were there to see Carolina and the Islanders last night. What do you think of those two teams? One of them's going to the conference finals. So, it really is. But Carolina jumps out to a 1-0 lead with the road win last night. What do we think of those teams as legitimate contenders here?
Well, you have to think of them as legitimate contenders only because of where they are and what they did in their first round. The Islanders dismantling a team, and then the Hurricanes showing some great fortitude and some great stick-to-itiveness to beat the Washington Capitals. They actually tire out the Washington Capitals. Come overtime in Game 7, they throttled the Caps. They dominated them. I mean, we'll start with the Carolina Hurricanes. They're a very confident team. I think that they're playing with house money, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I think they're saying, look, let's use that fact that nobody thinks that we should be here, and let's do the best that we can. And that's the attitude of their head coach, Rod Brind'Amour, who, in 1 year has become an incredibly, well-loved players coach. He gets it. I mean, he was a hell of a player when he played. Beardsy knows well. His attitude is the same with his guys as what he treated himself, what he did on the ice. His expectations are. And the fact that this team, they have a really good back end, especially the Slavin kid and Pesci and Justin Falk. He can be a little bit of an adventure in his own end, but he's been pretty good for them. They're getting those kind of performances. Their D are helping them get the puck out of their zone a lot. Mrazek, their goaltender, is playing at a different level than what I've seen consistently. Usually he was one good game, one bad. He's been pretty darn good. And I see them as a team. I'm not saying of destiny, like they're going to win, but just that they're playing with that kind of attitude that says, all right, let's just run this thing out here. They're patient as well, even though they want a forecheck. That's what they love to do. They're not going to be going too crazy. I mean, they're patient. So you're seeing a team just like the Islanders, speaking of a patient team, that, the Islanders are a team that I think they're good. I think they're the better team in the series. Does that mean they're going to win? I don't know. I think in the end that they would squeak it out if I had to bet on it. But the Islanders, they're confident too. They're getting it from their head coach, Barry Trotz. They need to keep having guys like Eberle and Barzal score, especially Eberle. If he keeps producing like that, I think they're in good shape.
Speaking of Barry Trotz, he, along with Craig Berube, St. Louis, and John Cooper of the Lightning, get the three finalist spots for the Jack Adams Award. I know some people around here thought that Bruce Cassidy would, you know, had a shot to be a finalist in that as well. What did you think of that list?
It's hard to argue with that list. Don't you agree? I mean, it, you know, of course, you know, Bruce Cassidy has been a, I think he did an outstanding job, especially given the injury situation, the demise that took place with this team, and especially the first half of the season, basically. But how do you deny, you know, what Barry Trotz did with the team that was the most goals against in the NHL, changed their systems, literally all their systems, and they another became the fewest goals against. You had the worst team in the NHL at the first half of the year in St. Louis, and then Craig Berube comes in and had them battling for number one in their division. And then you had the guy who, you know, regular season led his team behind the bench to one of the greatest seasons ever in regular season history. It's a hard, when you really break it down that way, it's a hard list not to say they got it right. The NHL broadcasters vote on that. They get that. They got that one right, at least I thought.
Yeah, there's a couple other good candidates. I mean, a couple teams in the playoffs right now that that weren't in the playoffs last year. I always look at those teams, right? Whether it's Jimmy Montgomery.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, Calgary probably deserves some credit there. And I don't know about it right now, but they had a great season. Even Rod Brind'Amour, but Cassidy very well could have been in that conversation.
Absolutely. I mean, there's just three finalists. So my guess is, you know, I don't know where the votes were. Maybe we'll find out after the actual award. My guess is Bruce was in the top five. That's my guess, that he was up there. He has a lot of – Bruce Cassidy, and Bruce gets this, I'm sure, more than I do, because he's around the league all the time, traveling around. Bruce got a lot of respect behind the bench for the Bruins, what he's done. A lot of people respect the job that he and his staff have done.
Just from an overarching perspective of this playoff so far, the division winners all get knocked out in the first round. It's the first time that that's ever happened, not only in the NHL, but in the history of North American sports, that all the division winners are knocked out in their first round or first game of the playoffs. Have we learned that the regular season isn't all it's cracked up to be?
I mean, I think in some ways, yes, and in some ways the regular season still has value. It's part of the battle of attrition that is the NHL season that culminates with the Stanley Cup playoffs. I do think that the regular season, just for the Bruins' sake, you know, getting home ice, I think it made a big difference in Game 7. I do. I think it was a factor in the game. But if you're referring to everybody else, I mean, look, we know that these teams are close. We see them, you know, over an 82-game season. We see, for the most part, you know, anybody can beat anybody on that given day or that given night. What's different about the playoffs is that, you know, during the season, it's three games in 5 nights, usually, against three different teams. And so there's a lot of different things that go into it, and it's not like a playoff series where if you give a team a focus, you give them a battle plan, and you give them everybody has their distinct role that, yeah, they may have it in the regular season, but again, it's constantly going against different teams. When it's one team that you're focusing on, when I say it makes it easier, I don't think it makes it easier to win. I think it makes it easier to game plan. And especially if your team is the weaker team, you put together a game plan, and if it starts working and you start getting into the heads or the hearts of the opponent, I think it makes a big difference, fellas. You know, all of a sudden, the expected team that should win starts getting a little tight, if you know what I mean. And I mean, look, the regular season shows us certain things. Great individual players, it gives us a history of what certain teams are really good at, for instance. It isn't the end-all, be-all, but these teams in the NHL, they've gotten the parity now, the salary cap. Everybody's close. I mean, really, everybody is pretty in the top 15. Everybody's pretty darn close, top 16, I should say.
All right, let's wrap up with some thoughts on the Bruins and Blue Jackets series, Billy. 8 o'clock, game 2 tonight, of course, here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. What did you see out of game 1, and you know, what do you expect this series to look like as it plays out?
Well, I love the result of game 1. I'm sure you guys have already gone over it. I mean, I know you have, and loved what the Bruins were able to do both early and late in the game. Obviously, middle of the game, we saw Columbus get themselves into a good spot. You see exactly what they are. You see how heavy they want to play. You see where they want to put the puck. You see the importance of their depth, too, between the Dubinskys, the Jenners, whether it's a Nash, a Foligno, et cetera. I see this Bruins team feeling confident about everybody in their lineup. Oh, look, again, I'm sure you guys went over it. I'm mildly, you know, you're cautious about where David Pastrnak's game is right now. It's got to get better. It just has to make them. It gives the Bruins a different element that they just that they haven't had. And I'm very concerned if David Krejci's out for any extended period of time. I'm here at the rink. I can't. I'm in the corner trying to keep cell service good. I have not seen him out there. I know he's listed it day to day, but that's a huge loss. It's not insurmountable.
Billy, I just got a text. From Judd saying that Krejci is on the ice. So
Okay.
But he just texted me and said he's on the ice. So sounds like somebody's coughing around you. Sounds like somebody's sick standing right behind you.
That'd be nice. If he can play, then that's great. But I liked what I saw, and it's going to be a fun series. I mean, Bearsy, doesn't this remind you of the potential for more than a couple of years ago of a physical type of series? I mean, at least in my eyes, it has the making for that. And for me, that gets me excited as a hockey fan, especially as a Boston hockey fan.
I feel like that by the time this series is over, the people of Boston are going to hate Columbus, and that's what the playoffs are supposed to be, right? This is what we talk about with playoff rivalries and all that. This is a team that isn't in your division, but you know what? You're going to come to hate the Columbus Blue Jackets in the next few games. It's awesome.
Yeah, Columbus is a nice town, but it houses the Ohio State for a Michigan person. That's already a check mark against it, but anyways, it's all good. Now, listen, I hope that the Bruins and the Blue Jackets do have one of those long physical series that makes even another rivalry in the NHL. That's what it's about. That's what it's supposed to happen.
Appreciate the time as always, Billy.
All right, guys, be well, Beardy. See you later. Be well, RJ.
Billy Jaffe on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. That is going to do it for this edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. We'll be listening tonight, 7:30 pregame, 8 o'clock faceoff here on 98.5 The Sports Hub with Judd and Bob on the call for Game 2. I will be here tomorrow for a 90-minute sprint with Mike Flynn and I from 11 until 12:30 after Bob Soucy's draft show and before the Celtics game 1 against the Bucks tomorrow. So we'll get as much reaction as we can in between those two things tomorrow with Johnston and Flynn. We'll talk to you then. Have a great rest of your Saturday.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.